you ever feel that time is rushing by you while you have accomplished only a fraction of what you are capable of? Is there an undercurrent of anxiety in your life that won't go away? It is possible for you to reach orbits of achievement you never dreamed of without any stress. It doesn't require hard work. It requires you to change your thinking. When you alter the dysfunctional models that you hold, your experience of life improves immediately. Both success and tranquility can be yours. Today, I'm going to be talking with the highly successful business coach, Dr. Sri Kumar Rao, about how we can take life lessons from ancient masters, sacred writings, and apply them to a modern day perspective. We will be talking about modern wisdom and just how much it is informed from our ancient roots. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark.
Dr. Sri Kumar Rao holds a PhD from Columbia Business School, and his courses have been among the most popular and highly rated at many of the world's top business schools. His work has been covered extensively by major media worldwide. In addition to his book, Modern Wisdom, Ancient Roots, The Movers and Shakers Guide to Unstoppable Success, he is the author of Are You Ready to Succeed? Unconventional Strategies for Achieving Personal Mastery in Business and Life and Happiness at Work. Be resilient, motivated, and successful no matter what. He is also the creator and narrator of the audio learning course, The Personal Mastery Program, Discovering Passion and Purpose in Your Life and Work. Dr. Sri Kumar Rao, welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you, Lindsay. It's my pleasure to be with you today.
I love your joy and your zest for life and how you... Even as I was reading through some of your book chapters over the past couple of days, I was like, the key to glorious freedom and wait a minute, the marvelous prison that's been boxing us in, everything you teach is really about how we can take ancient teachings and overlap them with what is our current modern experiences and how we can honestly be more successful. So start us out by giving us a brief intro to what is modern wisdom, what is ancient roots, and how do we use them to create unstoppable success?
If you want me to address all of that, do you have a couple of days?
I have a couple of days and plenty of time to read your book.
Let me tell you how I came to be doing what I do, because that's very relevant. I have a PhD from Columbia Business School, and I worked in corporate America, was very successful, got burnt out by politics, came to a university environment where I thought there would be no politics. I was sadly mistaken, and then I stagnated, and I was berating myself. I had such glorious education, such a wonderful early start to my career, and I threw it all away, and I've now wasted my life, et cetera, et cetera. All my life, I'd been doing a lot of reading, spiritual biography, mystical autobiography. That would take me to a wonderful place, and I came back to the real world, and it sucked. And I remember thinking, if the only way in which you can retain that peace, if you will, is by thinking, sitting down and thinking peaceful thoughts, and not when you came to the hurly-burly, then it's useless. But somehow I knew that wasn't true. I knew this was very valuable. I just hadn't figured out how to make use of it. So I decided I would create a course based on the teachings of the ancient masters, stripped of religious, cultural, and other connotations. And the thought of doing that made me come alive. So I created that course. It did well. I moved it to Columbia Business School in 1999, and it exploded. It was the only course there that was a university-wide draw. I had students from law school, business school, School of International and Public Affairs, Teachers College, journalism, you name it. And then it spread by word of mouth. Columbia is a major school, so students from other business schools came there and took the course, and they said, went back to their home institutions and said, you got to get this course, it's terrific. So I taught it in many top business schools, Columbia, London Business School, Berkeley, Kellogg, Imperial College. And now I've spun it out. So I teach it privately in New York, London, and San Francisco. Since the pandemic, of course, we've been virtual. And the key, as I said, is this course will profoundly change your life. And if it doesn't, we have both failed.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I stand behind. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot that have been taught to us by ancient masters, but they used examples and language that were pertinent to the time and geography that they were in. And modern persons in a post-industrial society don't necessarily relate to them. Mm-hmm. So my job is to translate. And I think I'm a pretty good translator.
Talk to us about some of your favorite stories that these ancient masters have taught that you think are very relevant to modern day society.
All right. One of the most important stories, actually, is the parable, a parable of the second arrow. Now, this is a Buddhist fable, and the Buddha was talking to his disciple, Ananda. And he asked Ananda, if an arrow were to hit you in the arm, would it not be very painful? And Ananda nodded his head, yes, Lord, it would be very painful. And if a second arrow were to hit you exactly where the first arrow hit you, would it not be even more painful? Yes, Lord, it would be even more painful. And then the Buddha asked a simple question, why then do you shoot the second arrow? And that generally leaves everyone confused, and I can see you don't understand that very clearly either. So let me give you a modern story to explain that. There was this woman, bright, you know, well-educated, successful executive, and she had a very painful breakup of her marriage. It was a very messy divorce. And she felt so drained that for a long time she couldn't do anything. But eventually, in bits and pieces, she pulled her life together again and decided she was ready. So she went to all the internet sites and filled in a profile and did all of the usual stuff. And she met this guy who was a entrepreneur, and he was funny and he was witty. And most important, he seemed really into her. So after a couple of weeks of texting and chatting, they decided to meet, and they decided to meet in the upscale Manhattan cafe. And she was all excited and went out and got a new dress, and they met. And 15 minutes into that meeting, he gets up, he throws his napkin on the table and says, I'm not interested, and walks out. And she was crushed. She was so crushed that the only thing she could do was call her friend. And her friend said, well, why are you surprised? You have fat hips. You don't have anything interesting to say. Why would a handsome, intelligent man pay any attention to you?
It's not a very good friend, just saying. It's not a good friend.
A friend would say something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Would you be less shocked if I said it wasn't what a friend said to her, it's what she told herself?
Amen to that. I have a saying that when my friends start talking bad about themselves to me, I will say, why are you talking about my friend like that? And, you know, it's not that what her friend said was so bad, but we do concoct these stories in our minds of just, I'm not enough, when really and truly he's just a jerk, you know, like, or he's just very honest.
That is the second arrow.
Yes, yes.
See, the moment I tell you that story, the concept of a second arrow becomes crystal clear.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting when you first told the story of what, you know, will the second arrow be even more painful? Why shoot it? It also brings up to me the idea of like, don't throw more bad after bad. Just say that you've done something wrong and don't make things worse.
Look, being rejected is bad enough. Does it make matters worse to tell yourself that you're physically unattractive and socially inadroit? But we do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, for most of my coaching clients, if I could get them to stop at the second arrow, they'd be ahead of the game. By the time they get to me, they're already at the 10th, 15th, or 246th arrows.
Yes, I know. I mean, self-sabotage is definitely a thing that holds us back from success. And so
that, if you will, is a perfect example of how ancient teachings are very relevant to us modern beings. You just have to explain it in examples and language that are relevant.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's what my entire book is about.
Okay. So I almost want to just say, like, tell me more stories. But you also in your book talk about the importance of mental models and this second arrow concept of like, if you can stop your own stinking thinking, you're going to ultimately be more successful. What are these mental models? How do they differ from reality and how can they change our lives?
A mental model is a notion you have that this is the way the world works. And you've got dozens of models. So you've got a model for how do I find a job? How do I get more guests on my podcast? How do I get more listeners to listen to the more guests that I'm getting on my podcast? And you've got dozens of mental models. Now, some of these models may be in conflict with each other, and you may or may not know that they are in conflict with each other. The problem is not that you have mental models. The problem is that you don't know they are mental models. You think this is reality. It's not reality. It's a model. But the more you invest in your model, the more you believe that the universe works that way. And very soon you're in a silo that's so thick you can't break out of it. For example, here is something that's, here's a good example. Maybe some of your listeners can relate to it. So I had one of my former students who was working in a hedge fund, very bright girl. But she said, Professor Rao, you can't imagine how bad my situation is. Her boss was one of these zillionaires and very successful financially, and he was very profane, had absolutely no compunction about, you know, yelling or berating people. And every time he got mad at a person, he would stand up, and he wasn't very tall. So, you know, he'd stand up to his full height. He'd put his face in the other person's face and start screaming, and his cheeks would turn red and bits of spit would fly and fall wherever. And so a student said, Professor Rao, you don't know how bad it is. I can't take it anymore. And the moment my bonus check vests, I'm out of there. And I told her, that's fine. You know, you can leave. But you have spent a fair amount of time out there and you'll be walking away from all of that investment you've already made. This, what can I do? I can't really deal with this situation. So I told her a story about the time that I took my kids to Disney World. And we were waiting in line for an attraction, and there was a small kid who was bothering everyone. He had sticky fingers, and he'd go out and touch them, and the father would hold him close, and he'd cry when he got held close. The father would release him, and then he'd touch other people with sticky fingers, and they'd look at him. Very uncomfortable situation. Then all of a sudden, the mother appeared. And with this capacity that mothers seem to have, she saw the kid and said, he's hungry, and she produced food. And in less than 10 minutes, he was the life and soul of the party, you know. Everybody was looking at him and smiling, and he was playing with people. Remarkable transformation. 10 minutes. So I told my student, when your boss is screaming, just think he's a child having a temper tantrum. She was significantly unimpressed.
Okay.
A few days later, she did something that caught his ire. So he went into his routine. He drew himself up. He looked at her. His face turned red. He started screaming. And what I said seemed so apropos that this was a kid throwing a temper that she couldn't help herself. She burst out laughing. It was as if she had slapped him on the face with a wet fish.
Mm-hmm.
What did you say? And she forgets how she got about it, but in her head, there was a transition. This was no longer an ogre capable of, tyrannizing her. It was simply an overgrown kid having a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is, the moment there was that shift in her head, there was also a change in their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Behaved exactly as he did with everybody else, but he never shouted at her again. And 6 months later, she got another position and shipped out.
It reminds me of, I love a woman who talks about how, her name is Dr. Carolyn Mine, and she talks about how for every emotion, there's an equal and opposite emotion. And we think that we can't combat anger, but the opposite of anger is laughter. And so your story is something that I feel like I've been teaching for so many years, where if you can just look anger in the face and go, like, if this person was the opposite of where they are now, they would be laughing hysterically. And so that is the champion of anger. And what a powerful thing for her to be able to show the entire office that if you don't accept the behavior will not be given to you. It's all about, one of my colleagues says, rewarded behavior is repeated behaviors. And so if you engage while somebody is in that angry state and they just want to fight and brawl, you're rewarding that behavior. And so it's going to get repeated, versus if you look at it like a little kid pitching a tantrum in the floor, you just are like, oh, that's not going to help. It's not going to help in any way.
Yes, indeed.
So when you work with your clients, what are some of the changes that people make in their own daily behaviors that help them to become more successful?
Okay. Let me share another story with you, because this is very highly relevant. Take any event that happens in your life, Lindsay. Whatever the event is, it does not cause suffering. Suffering begins the instant you label that event, this is bad, this is terrible. Let's say you get fired. Okay, so you now have a lot of free time. But you get fired and go, oh my God, how am I going to pay my mortgage? My kid's college tuition is due. This is terrible. And the moment you say this is terrible, at that instant, suffering begins.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
It does not begin when the event occurs. Suffering, yes, begins the instant you label that event. This is bad. This is terrible.
It reminds
me
of...
Let me tell you an ancient Sufi tale. Okay. There was a man and his son, and they lived in a beautiful valley, and they were very happy. They were also very poor. And the man got sick and tired of being poor. He decided he was going to be a rich man, and he was going to become a rich man by breeding and selling horses. He bought a stallion. Didn't have enough money to buy a stallion, so he borrowed heavily from the neighbors. And the very day he got the stallion, it kicked the top bar loose from the paddock where he housed it and ran away. And the neighbors came around. Oh, you were going to become a rich man, but your stallion has run away. You are screwed. And you still owe us money. And the man shrugged his shoulder and said, good thing, bad thing, who knows? That stallion fell in with a group of wild horses, which were close to where the man was, and he was able to entice them into the paddock, which he had repaired, so escape was no longer possible. So all of a sudden, he had the stallion back, plus about a dozen wild horses. And by the standards of that village, that made him a wealthy man. Mm. And the villagers came around and said, we thought you were destitute, but fortune has smiled upon you. How lucky you are. And he shrugged his shoulder and said, good thing, bad thing, who knows? The man and his son started to break the horses so they could sell them on the market. And one of the horses threw the man's son and stomped on his leg. And it broke and it healed crooked. And the neighbors came around. He was such a fine young lad. And now he'll never be able to find a girl to marry him. How terrible. And the man shrugged his shoulder and said, good thing, bad thing, who knows? That summer, the king of the country declared war on a neighboring country. And press gangs moved through the villages, rounding up all the able-bodied young men to serve in the army. But this man's son was spared because he had a crooked leg. And the neighbors had tears in their eyes. They said, "We don't know if we'll ever see our son survive again, but you still have your son. How lucky you are." And he shrugged his shoulder and said, "Good thing, bad thing, who knows?" And it goes on like that forever.
Mm-hmm.
Can you look back on your life and recall a situation when something happened that at the time it happened, you thought this was terrible? But
no.
Now with the perspective of time and wisdom, you can say that wasn't so terrible after all, or even that was a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think everybody can.
If something happened in your past that at the time it happened, you thought this was terrible, but you can now look back and say it wasn't terrible, or maybe even it was terrific rather than terrible, then what about what you're about to label bad? Is there any possible scenario by which in X years it could turn out to be good? Is it possible? Just asking yourself that question will move you to a different emotional domain. And if you then ask yourself the next question, what can I proactively do to actually make it good? And you move seamlessly from the realm of despair to the realm of possibility. I can't tell you the number of my students who I've met, some I've met decades after they took my course, who said, "Professor Rao, good thing, bad thing, who knows, changed my life."
I agree. It brings up a couple of things for me. When I was an academician, I was so just caught up with just childhood anger, not like fully matured yet. I mean, I was a young professor, all the things. And it was offered to me to go to a corporate communications coach. And I was so mad. I was so ticked off because, I mean, I know how smart I am, how talented I am. I know the knowledge. I know I have all the things. And it was just one of those things where everybody's like, where I'm telling myself, they just don't understand me. They just don't understand me. And somewhere 10 minutes into the first visit with this corporate communications coach, I was like, I am going to do every single thing that she tells me to do. And what if? What if it works? What if I end up, I read every book, I did every exercise, I sent her every email that she had asked, like all the things. And it turned out to be one of the greatest blessings of my life, because now I understand so much more about, these are the dynamics of personalities within the workplace. Here are habits that you're continuing to do that are stopping you from being successful. When we came to your team and asked you to be on the show, I was so inspired by your work because it reminds me so much of the time that I spent with this corporate communications coach where I read Marshall Goldsmith's book about the 20 habits that are holding you back from being more successful. And I love it so much. And even right now, I am going through some very stressful litigation. And it's my first time ever having to deal with litigation. And you kind of hope you go your whole life not ever having to deal. Yes, I mean, like, you don't want to do it. And every time it gets tough, every time it gets challenging, I just remember that, you know what? This is flexing a muscle that's going to make me more resilient, have more capacity, be able to mentor others going through similar situations. And this good thing, bad thing, who knows? It also reminds me of Eckhart Tolle's brilliant quote of stress is nothing more than wanting the present moment to be something that it's not.
Exactly correct. Yes.
And so if you're just like, well, I could be stressed out about this, I could think of this as a bad thing, or I could just question, who knows, you know? And it sounds like to me, your goal with your clients is not exclusively just making bajillions of dollars, but actually having a shift in the mindset. So
before we get to the rest of my interview, let's take a break for a word from our sponsors.
This episode of The Lindsay Elmore Show is sponsored by Sambucol. Now that the holidays are over and we are well into the new year, I like to assess all of my routines. What's serving me? What isn't? And is there anything I can add to help aid me in my health and wellness journey? This is where Sambucol comes in. I recently started taking Sambucol's Black Elderberry every morning to help support my immune system so I can keep doing what I need to do every single day. It's a simple act of self-care that I can do without much effort. Sambucol is made from premium European black elderberries, which are a natural source of powerful antioxidants and key vitamins like A, C, and E. They help support a healthy immune system so you can keep moving. And Sambucol has many ways to get your daily helping of black elderberry, like syrups, gummies, chewable tablets, drink powders, capsules, and more. They even have products for kids, too. My listeners can get an extra 15% off of their next order of $9.99 or more at SambucolUSA.com by using my promo code Lindsay15 at checkout. That's 15% off your order of $9.99 or more at SambucolUSA.com. That's code LINDSEY/15 at checkout. And here's a pro tip. Save this promo and the website address in your notes apps. I know you're busy, and oftentimes we forget things that we intend to remember. So head right now to SambucolUSA.com and use code Lindsay15 to save 15% at checkout. And now, let's get back to the show. What does it mean to you to live a joyful and tranquil life, especially in a world that just moves too fast?
Well, the world is always moving fast. Change has always been a part of it. With regard to what you said about coaching, I am an executive coach because, you know, that's a convenient heading for people to understand. But I actually prefer the term friend, philosopher, and guide. And the most famous historical example was probably that of Aristotle and Alexander. Alexander was a very willful child, and his father, Philip of Macedonia, didn't know how to deal with him. So he asked Aristotle, "Would you please talk to my son? I can't handle him." So Aristotle started working with Alexander, and they worked with him for 3 years. And you can bet your boots that Aristotle did not teach Alexander how to be a better swordsman or how to lay siege to a mountain fortress. They talked about Homer, poetry, science, the meaning of life. But at the end of 3 years, Alexander became the person who became, who then went on to do what he did. That's the model. My clients talk to me about everything, their personal situations, their business situations. And what I'm telling them is not, here's what you do. What I give them is a framework of analysis. Here is who you are being. And they find that so incredibly helpful.
Talk to me more about that. Like, this is who you are being.
Okay. So let's take an example. You're having a hard day at the studio, you know, many problems. You go home. And your young son says, "Hey, mommy, come and do this." And you say, "Yes, I'll play with you. Let me have a cup of coffee." No, no, he gets insistent. And all of a sudden, you blow up. You are being an irritated mom who can't deal with a son who patently wants her attention. Is that who you want to be? Of course, that's not who you want to be. Who do you want to be? You want to be a person who can cope with the stresses of your life, but still have plenty of time, love, compassion for your child when he needs it. What would that person do? And all of a sudden, there's a radical shift in your thinking. Have a very clear image of the person you want to be. Assume that mantle. And from that mantle, deal with the situation that is causing you upset.
I love that advice. I think that is absolutely profound. You know, who are you being? Who do you want to be? And what would that person do? Those are really amazing questions to just keep in the back pocket. And it also puts into perspective, it's not about dropping everything and doing like the false self-sacrificial, well, I just won't have my coffee and I will play with my kid begrudgingly. But it leaves space for the parent to figure out, how do I meet my own needs as well as the needs of the child?
Exactly correct.
Why do you think that spiritual journeys are so important for our success as human beings, our successes in business? Like, why do you think that this ancient wisdom is, you know, it weaves that spiritual journey throughout every facet of our life?
I don't believe, Lindsay, that there is a spiritual journey and there is a regular rest of your life journey.
Amen to that.
Misconception. Mm-hmm. I think there's only one life you need, not a spiritual life and a business life and a parental life or all that. And mm-hmm. your entire life is nothing but a spiritual journey. And in that journey, there are things that you do, like be a mom, run a podcast, run a business, engage in litigation or engage in fighting litigation or whatever comes down the path. But essentially, you are pure spirit having a human experience. And in that human experience, there are these various dimensions. Mm-hmm. It makes my life much easier for you to deal with all of the vicissitudes of regular life if you remember that you are a spiritual being. Mm-hmm. That's something we tend to forget very fast.
And why is that important?
Because that's the only way you're going to have lasting peace. That's the only way you're going to have the vision that I have for you. And that is, you wake up in the morning with your blood singing at the thought of being who you are and doing what you do. That as you go through the day, you could fall to your knees in involuntary gratitude at the tremendous good fortune that has been bestowed on you. Where you're radiantly alive. If not all the time, at least for a chunk of every day.
Isn't that so amazing that you can just find ways to have pockets of extraordinary joy? And what are some of the things that you think most people find really mundane that just marvel you in your daily life?
Anything and everything. I'll tell you something. When I came to America, it was the culmination of a long, I'd always wanted to come to America. I had an opportunity, and for various reasons, it was stolen from me, so I felt bad about that. And 2 years later, an even better opportunity came. Good thing, bad thing, who knows, remember? So I came to do my PhD at Columbia University, Columbia Business School, one of the top business schools in the world. But this was in the 70s, and at that time, the area around Columbia was not what it is today. It was almost physically unsafe and very, very run down. And, you know, there were people who looked at it, that is the pits, the run down buildings, the cockroaches in all of the apartments, how terrible. But I could look at the exact same thing and say, I'm in America, life is wonderful.
Yes, you can. You can look at anything and just say, like, this is the greatest thing ever, you know?
Think about the classic immigrant story. He comes to the country, can't speak the language, does not have skills to fit into a modern economy, gets a job as a dishwasher at a local restaurant. And 20 years down the line, he owns that restaurant and a chain of others and is a prosperous, well-liked pillar of the community. Mm-hmm. When he was washing dishes, he wasn't washing dishes. He was building a better life for his kids and himself.
Mm-hmm. It's that old adage about the stonemasons, the three stonemasons building a cathedral. And one of them, you know, it's that whole thing of your perspective is everything. What are some of your other like favorite questions that you can ask yourself in the moment to get you out of the negative thought processes and back into the person that you want to be?
The realization that your awareness is like a flashlight, Lindsay. What does a flashlight do? A flashlight shines, illuminates whatever you shine it on. Shine it on the floor, lights up the floor. Shine it on the ceiling, lights up the ceiling. I'll prove it to you right now. I want you to take your flashlight of awareness and shine it on the chair in which you are sitting. And the moment you do that, you become aware of the pressure of your buttocks on the seat. You feel the fabric or the leather against the back of your thigh, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Seconds ago, you were not aware of any of that, but now you are.
Well, and it also, since I'm sitting on a ball, it reminds me to move around again.
So the moment you shine the flashlight of your awareness, you become conscious of that. Where do we typically shine the flashlight of our awareness on? We shine it on the 2, 3, or 4 things that are wrong in our lives. More precisely, in the 2, 3, or 4 things that we have arbitrarily decided is wrong in our life. And the many dozens of things that are pretty good about our lives, we don't shine the flashlight of our awareness on them, so they pass by unnoticed. You don't have to bother about whether you're going to have dinner tomorrow, you have a bed to sleep in, you have a roof over your head. Any of these would be a big deal in a big chunk of the world outside, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you ignore all of that. Bad strategy. So simply look upon, where am I shining the flashlight of my awareness on?
Mm-hmm.
You will find that you're shining the flashlight of your awareness on the things that don't take you to places you want to spend time in.
Mm-hmm.
You have a choice. You can change where you shine the flashlight of your awareness on. That is a very powerful tool.
Yes.
You recognize your awareness is like a flashlight and you get to decide where you're going to put it. All of a sudden you say, I don't want to put it on this. Yeah, it's a problem. It's litigation. It catches me by the neck. But I'm not going to obsess on it. Whatever needs to be done, I'm going to do it. But I'm going to focus on how many people are being benefited by the podcast that I create regularly.
Yes, absolutely. And how many people are going to, you know, forward this episode to a friend because it added value to their lives? You know, I listen to the John Maxwell Leadership Podcast, and one of their taglines is, we pour into leaders who amplify, who add value to others. And that's what I want to do. Is I love doing this podcast because it's always a learning opportunity for me, and I get to learn from I get to learn from people like you, some of the most prolific success and business teachers in the whole wide world, people that inspire me, that I look up to, that consistently show up and add value everywhere that they turn. And when we are able to say, like, man, I just know that 30,000, 50,000 people are going to listen to this episode because there's one person listening right now who is like, you know who needs to hear this is so-and-so. They need, yeah, it all happens just one good move at a time. And I, as far as the awareness goes, I have also loved doing this podcast because it trains me to be very intentional with my listening of other people. I remember when I first started the podcast, it was hard to put down my phone, hard to not surf the internet while I was doing it because it's all virtual. But now I look back at these extraordinary conversations that have helped me to learn not just ways to be healthy, but ways to be resilient, ways to be successful, ways that I can stay motivated day after day. Because some of these one-liners that you've dropped for us in this episode, I know people are just going to remember forever. And so, you know, take us out and just let us know, what do you want ultimately the listeners to remember most about this conversation?
What I would like every listener to remember is, we don't live in a real world. We live in a construct. It's as if every single one of us was living in the Matrix, but this is not a matrix created by an alien civilization out to enslave us, but something that we created ourselves with our mental chatter and our mental models. And having created it, we then experience it as we have created it. Now, this is actually a very liberating concept, Because if you live in a real world and you don't like it, you're screwed. But if you live in a world and it's a construct and you don't like it, you can deconstruct the parts of it that are not working for you and build it up again. Mm. And you can do that again and again and again. It's a rest of your life process.
To break down those.
Are doing that, that's what my coaching and programs are all about. Mm, you live in a construct, you don't live in a real world. And if you don't like your construct, take it apart and put it together again. And you can do this many, many, many times, no matter what your situation in life is.
I mean, that's that marvelous prison boxing you in is just these constructs that we tell ourselves. And one of your chapter titles really caught my eye, and I only had a chance to read just a couple of paragraphs because we talk a lot on this show about our inner child. And I was curious if you would tell us a little bit more about your chapter, The Kill the Child, Your Life Depends on It. Tell us about that.
That actually has to do with something I remembered. I went to a Catholic school when I was young, and one of the important lessons was morals. That was the first class we had. And in that book, we had a textbook for that. It was an illustrated book. And there was a story about a king who used to go off riding, and a small child would drop out of a tree and try to fight him with a toy sword. And the king would get down and easily take the sword away, and then he would kiss the child. And, you know, he really enjoyed his interaction. But every day the child grew a little bit bigger, and soon they were having spirited contests. And one day it took the king all of his skill to disarm the child, who was now a young man, and he was wounded in the process. And he was really angry, and the child begged for mercy, as he always did. And the king granted that and went back. And the next day the king was riding, and the child, no longer a child, but a strong young man, jumped from the tree and easily knocked down the king and disarmed him. Mm. And the king said, okay, today you win, tomorrow will be different. And the child says, there will be no tomorrow, and he lops off the king's head.
Oh.
Somewhat gruesome for a 8-year-old, but the lesson is very important. All of the things that bother us didn't happen in a single day. A single hamburger did not make you fat. A single drink of whiskey did not make you an alcoholic. But you keep doing these things, and one after another, as you do, it's like the child, he gets stronger and stronger, and one day he can lop off your head. Mm. Recognize this. You're probably already at the stage where the child is no longer a child, he's probably a youth, but he still does not have the capacity to overwhelm you. Kill him now while you have a chance, because if you don't, he is going to lop off your head. So gruesome tale, intriguing title, but a very powerful lesson.
Yes, a friend texted me and said, I know why I got so upset yesterday. And she said, it's because I'd been frustrated by this one thing, and it had been building. And that's exactly what you're saying. And how often does that happen, especially like in marriages, in relationships where, bless you, where there's one little thing that just gets at you. And instead of just addressing it from the get-go, you allow it to become this huge thing in your mind. Ugh, so
that's why I said, kill the child, kill it now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, just address it.
Title for a chapter, isn't it?
It is, because you know, you also think of the wounded inner child who presents themselves in our lives, and at some point we also have to do the whole I love you, I accept you, but you're not speaking right now, wounded inner child. And so I think that is an important thing too, where it's almost like you kill your inner child with kindness, you know what I mean? And nurture them just with layers and layers of kindness. And so I love all of the work that you have put together. Listeners, go pick up a copy of Modern Wisdom, Ancient Roots, The Movers and Shakers Guide to Unstoppable Success. And you can also check out Are You Ready to Succeed? Unconventional Strategies for Achieving Personal Mastery in Business as well as Life and Happiness at Work. And you can also find out more about Dr. Rao's work at www.therauinstitute.com. Very strongly encourage you to check it out and perhaps attend one of Dr. Rao's coaching sessions. Dr. Srikumar Rao, thank you so much for coming in and being a guest today on The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you, Lindsay, for having me on your show. And I wish your podcast reaches many times more listeners than it currently is. I'm sure it will, because you've got such a radiant energy about you, and that's what people pick up on.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Do you want to live a healthy lifestyle, but you are so done with temporary diets and exercises, and you don't know where to find reliable health education? You don't have someone you can trust to lead you to which wellness options are out there. And you think that you don't have enough time to cook or go to the gym, and that leads you to feel defeated. When you go to wellnessmadesimple.us, you can learn practical skills that you need to build a healthy lifestyle. You'll gain access to more than 85 videos, 11 hours of education, and more education is always being added. And you'll join a community that has given more than 2,400 positive reviews to Wellness Made Simple. All you have to do is get access. And right now, we are offering half off of an annual subscription when you shop the code 2023WELLNESS. After that, watch the coursework and then implement daily changes that positively transform your health so that you can feel better. Go to wellnessmadesimple.us, get an annual subscription, and shop the code 2023WELLNESS for half off your annual subscription. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support The Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag at Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.